5 o'clock. Time for Curtis K to rock your ride home.
And what a thrill we have for you, absolutely live in the studio.
Hello.
Mr. Peter Frampton, and you got to introduce this gentleman over here.
Well, and thank you, fans. on my left, it's Bob Mayo on guitar, Bob Mayo.
You have to be versatile these days, you know what I'm saying? You have to multitask as often as possible.
This freaking guy, I tell you, he plays the guitar as good as he plays the keyboards, I tell you. I hate him, but he's my brother.
That was it. You know, we could all go home now. Yeah. I just want to hear Bob Mayo on guitar, Bob Mayo.
Obviously, it's usually Bob Mayo on keyboard.
See you later. Bye.
Good night. Yeah.
His last name is Bob Mayo. Middle name is on keyboards. So,
Bob Mayo. Yes. We got absolutely live being brought to you by Tonic and a Pack on. New Jersey presenting Tonic on the Rocks every Friday night live. Bands in the Blue Room, the 80s, and the Hits Room. For info and directions, call 1-866-NJ-TONIC or log on to njtonic.com. And by the way, I'd like to introduce, we've all been introduced, our winners of our contest.
That's
absolutely
right.
Live. We've got Donna over here, right? Donna from Highland Parks and Duke.
Right.
And you are?
Ellen.
And?
Dan.
Dan, there you go.
So yes.
Congratulations to all those people. Thank you for being here.
What did
here.
They win?
They wanted to be in the room with
you. Oh, okay.
So,
they
that
wanted
great?
That?
Yeah,
they
did.
Okay,
and,
good.
Of course, a meal from the Rattlesnake Ranch Cafe, Route 53 in Danville.
Music and a meal.
So,
cash and prizes.
Exactly. Bob, tell them what they've won.
We have some lovely party gifts for you.
So, a great job at the Community Theater of Morristown. Matt Murray was the host for that.
Yeah,
thank
Matt you.
Matt Murray was in the studio. You're at the Count Basie Theater tomorrow. It's got to be great to be on the road again, isn't it?
It is. It is, and it, especially with a new record. So we as well as doing the old faithful songs. No pictures, please. No. I'm joking. No, I'm not. No, as well as doing the old faithfuls, we're doing some new stuff as well, which is really nice. We've waited a long time, so... It's very nice for the creativity juices.
The new CD is called Now, which is your first one in 9 years?
Yes.
Which I know you've been putting out live stuff,
in
Detroit and things like that over the
and
years.
And reissues, we remixed Comes Alive and put out the 25th anniversary issue, which is also just come out on SACD because we mixed it in surround sound as well. So, and then I believe... To cover all formats, they're coming out with the DVD-A for Christmas.
So, really?
So you can be in the middle by the sound mixer in Winterland in 1975.
Now, I know you absolutely wanted to remix and remaster the Frampton Comes Alive,
yes.
Which was done a while back ago. Because what was it like? You heard, everybody. So everybody's got that record in their collection. I can't tell you, 1, 2, 3. I burned out... 3 vinyl copies of Frampton Comes Alive when it first came out. I mean, it was just unbelievable. But it's amazing. People listen to it.
Terry's waving it in the back.
They have great memories. Terry's still got your poster hanging on the wall.
You do?
You do?
I don't care what you say. Sergeant Pepper, my favorite movie. The
oh,
best.
Dear.
No, it's best movie ever.
Well, thank you. Right up there with Parent Trap.
Well, you were in
the original.
you were in Almost Famous.
I was. So I can now say I was in, without not wishing to put down Terry, but I've been in the worst movie, and rock movie, and I've been in one of the best. So
that's a classic film.
Yeah,
how
almost,
weird was it for you to play the road manager of Humble Pie was
well that was Cameron Crowe's ironic joke he played on me, so yeah, I just sort of I was basically there to be the
consultant,
technical consultant on making sure that Jason Lee and Billy Crudup looked like they knew what they were doing, and also that we didn't have you know, it took place in 1973, that everything was time sensitive. Because that used to drive me and Cameron. We used to speak about rock movies. We used to hate them,
right,
Cameron
right,
and
right,
I,
right.
You know. And he called me up and said, I'm doing a rock movie. I said, no, you're not. You can't. We've decided we don't like you. He said, well, that's why I want you to come and help me make sure that it's realistic, you know. So that was my job. And he just said, but I'd like you to be in, you know, in the movie as well, just as a little, you know, token gift. Well, thank you, Cameron. And that's what he chose for me. So it was a lot of fun.
I must have been. I mean, but it must have been. You had to step back and went, this can't be happening. I can't believe.
I know. And the thing was, Stillwater, their first appearance, the first one we did, they were supposed to be, that their equipment was on the front of the stage because Black Sabbath's equipment, they were opening for Black Sabbath,
right,
supposedly. And so the set designer said, how far back would do you think the Black Sabbath's equipment would be? I said, I know, because I did it. So it was right there. Bass drum was in the way when Humble Pie did it, you know, so.
So I don't need a movie for this.
Yes. I do not know. No, I do not need that.
Now, how did you two guys hook up, Bob? I mean, how did you, you've been doing session work for everybody from Foreigner. I mean, you're a walking encyclopedia of music. I mean, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, how did you guys originally hook up?
I went to London in 71 to record a record with a group that I was working with at the time called Doc Holliday. And Peter was involved, and his engineer, Chris Kimsey, at the time, engineered and produced the record. So we met then, and we just kept in touch until, fortunately, the keyboard chair became available.
Oh, wow.
So I grabbed it.
So, but I mean, you guys have been together for so long. There was a period where
we didn't speak.
You wouldn't.
No.
You wouldn't. Well, you were doing different things.
I lost his number.
It was like
he changed his number.
Wasn't there like this big fight? I remember reading about it. No. I'm just kidding. No. But
no, we only speak when we're on stage.
Hey.
No, it's been an incredible just long time together, and I just can't imagine, you know, working without Bob or the guy, that John Regan and Chad Cromwell. We found the band now like we had found the band in the 70s with Siomis, John Siomis, and, right, and Stanley Sheldon, and Bob and myself. And this is really, I feel just as comfortable, if not more comfortable now, because, well, we're all straightened up. So we remember where we've been and what we played. So, you know, it's great, and it's sort of like a club, you know, that it's only a four-man club, and we're in it. And, you know, if one of the guys, if Bob's got another thing he's doing, or Chad's like the number one session guy in Nashville. And so we just walk around it, because I don't want to play with anybody else but these guys.
That's,
you know,
the way it should be at,
yeah,
this point, right?
Yeah.
All right. What do you guys want to do for us?
Yeah. Well, we thought we'd do the first acoustic time version of Verge of a Thing, which is the first track on the new record.
Sounds great to me. And DHA,
you want to count it in, Bob?
Please. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I'm as white as a dead man walking a precipice. You look at me, wanna hear me talking, but all there's no flaming ears. It ain't the wine or the dope that's talking. It ain't your psychic omens or dream. No, I have been to the mountain and I have a dream. Baby, we're on the verge of a, oh yeah, in English, but my blood is Russian. Face it down with adrenaline. I look at you and I see you blushing, appearing now in my wildest dreams. It ain't the wine or the dope that
Jackie gone, Ben's a dream. No, I hop into the mountain and I have a dream. Baby, we're on the verge of a... It ain't the wine or the dope that's talking. It ain't just Jackie gone, Ben's a dream. No, I hop into the mountain and I have a dream. Baby, we're on the verge of a...
Thank you.
Absolutely live with Peter Frampton, Bob Mayo in the studio. Verge of a Thing from the brand new one now. You guys are great. That's absolutely tremendous.
Well, thank you.
It's such an up song. It's such a great song. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. You, let me just do something real quick here. Okay.
Right.
So you kind of, what for 9 years, what took the 9 year period to get there?
Well, actually, I don't know whether you've noticed, but the record industry is in the toilet.
Really? I haven't noticed.
Yeah. There's things called video games, and which weren't around when you and I were first perusing the record store on a Saturday, you know. And spending, I just remember so many people spending all weekend in the record store. I'm sure they still do it, but just not as many as before. And obviously we've got the downloading situation, which is, you know, I don't think it's there, and I don't blame the kids. I don't blame people in general for doing it. It's the technology is there, but the problem being is that the cat is out of the bag as far as I'm concerned, and it's very hard to get the cat back in the bag. Once something is free, people sort of expect it. And I don't think that those people that have been doing it an awful lot really quite understand that without the... Say, if I'm the artist, you're the record company, and you're the writer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nice song, thank all you. Right. But so, good. No, but say I'm an artist. I don't write my own songs. So, first of all, I've got to go to you for the song. You don't get paid when it's from a download. Then, let's start from the beginning. You, as the record company, don't get paid.
Right.
Therefore, you're not going to pay the writer, and you can't pay the artist
yeah,
either.
That's right.
So we all agree, seeing as Universal Music has just reduced the price of CDs $6, folks. You know, so we know that they've been gouging us for years.
Sure, of course.
The record companies, and. You know, so that was greed, you know, because the CEOs needed more money per year, like they needed another 10 mil each, you know. And who's been suffering? It's been the kids, because they can't, the people, I say kids, record buyers in general, you know, it should be commensurate with your work and how much you make, and you go to a concert and you want to buy a CD, you want to buy a couple of CDs. Now it's like, kids, they can't do it as much as they could. So, hey, what happens? Downloading. Wow. And then burning a CD. It's, you can't blame people for wanting to do that. It's, I don't blame them. It's just that's the way it is. But when you've got someone like Steve Jobs with Apple that has invented iTunes, mm-hmm. basically, whereby, he makes it, I think his iTunes was responsible for Universal and probably all the others reducing their CD rates, because it's 99 cents a song. I think that's great.
Yeah, right.
And you don't have to buy the whole album if you don't want to.
Exactly.
Which will make people make better records, I think.
Sure.
Because what's been happening is one great song and then fillers, you know. And that's another thing that we've been, you know, certain artists haven't been as diligent as they could be. So, and then if you think that on average $10 or $12, it's 10 or 12 songs per album, so if it's 99 cents a song, you've got yourself between $10 and $12, you've got yourself a great album.
Right.
So, and what did they reduce it to? $12.99. See, so it's all commensurate, I think, with what Steve Jobs did. And I think he's a very brave man for doing that, because he's now being sued by using the name Apple by the Beatles.
Oh, really?
When they signed the deal in 91, that was the one stipulation, that he not get involved in any aspect of the music business. So once he did that with iTunes,
Just people from Apple Records. Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, do some words, and then we'll come back. I want you to do a couple more songs. We'll talk more about the new CD. But you're right. I mean, you know, it's people don't realize when they're downloading music for free, it's like, great, it's like, I don't want to pay for the record. But it's not like when you walk into a pizzeria and go, boy, I don't like the price of a pizza. You know, I think I'll just take it.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing with artists. Yeah. You know, it's the same thing.
And coincidentally, at the same time, our audience is getting older.
Right.
And, you know, they don't have the disposable income because of the, you know, current economic
situation. Sure, of course.
So they have to make choices, and most of the times it's going to be on things other than music.
And do you think in the long
run... So we're being bombarded at both ends.
And do you think that has really stopped certain artists, as you were saying, like yourself, from not recording because it's really shrunk. I mean, it's like one style of music and that's it, and, you know, and they're not open to different...
It's a disposable, it's the fast food nation.
Right.
That's where we are in this country. Mm. In as much as the older artists are getting edged out, phased out. We don't want you now. Go away where it's the... Then it was the boy bands. Now they're disappearing.
Right.
They're over. On to the next. It's just new. But the thing is that new artists, there's no... You've got to sound like somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you won't get signed.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, it's the Norah Jones, thank goodness, are the real accidents that I don't know how she got through, but she did, you know, as something completely musical.
And once one takes off, then it opens up for everybody else.
Right,
and everything, I always believe everything goes in cycles. And as you prove when you're out, you're selling out shows all over the place. Record company people have to look at it and go, you know what, maybe we made a mistake, but they'll never remember that. You know?
No, they won't.
So let's do this. We'll be back. Hang on. Peter Frampton, Absolutely Live at DHA. Absolutely Live with Peter Frampton and Bob Mayo.
Yes, we are, aren't we? Absolutely.
This has been a lot of fun. It's been fun. Now is, of course, as we said, the new CD. You called this a selfish CD. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, just as every artist should be selfish, I think. I made mistakes in the past when, after the huge success of Comes Alive, which was very selfish because I didn't know what people wanted anyway. And so I just did what I wanted to do. And then I became wary of what others might want to hear from me, which is death for a creative person. You know, it's got to come from within. So that's why I say selfish, in as much as rightly so, that it should be only what comes naturally for me. And it's not in any way following a trend. It's not in any way trying to sound like somebody else to get on the radio or whatever. You know, it's just what comes naturally, and then what I feel out of that bunch, like we had at least two albums worth of material, excuse me, and in the end, it was sort of self-evident as we'd finish each one, and you go, and they would like sink to the bottom. Those ones that weren't the strong one, the weak went to the bottom, and the strong survived, you know, and that was it. It was just very... we did have, actually... Bob is responsible for Verge of a Thing being on the record.
Oh, really?
Because I, actually, wrongly, I got too close to it, and I thought maybe that didn't sound like me, right? And Bob, I think, he campaigned. He did TV ads in Cincinnati.
I did. Became a pain in the ass.
Really?
And
I said, he sounds like you.
Really? I was just worried. I didn't want to sound like I was trying to, like I was saying, like it was sounding like. But so anyway, he is responsible for me. But in the end, I said, sounds really good, doesn't it?
It's a great song.
Yeah.
Glad I thought of it.
It jumps out of the radio the first time you hear it. Why don't we get you to do something else for us? What would you like to do?
Well, this one is actually one that was written in the spring of 2001, and Gordon Kennedy from Nashville and myself wrote this one. It's a little a melody that I'd have for quite a while, and then we just sort of talked and had a cup of coffee, and then I played in this bit, and then we sat down and wrote the words. It's called Not Forgotten.
Bob Mayo, absolutely live in the studio. What a pretty song. That is just a beautiful song. Is that written with anybody in mind? Or?
It's just basically about, you know, we're born, we live, unfortunately we go. And it's that's really, it's just really a song about life, really. And some people assumed, unfortunately, that I wrote it after 9/11. And I mean, it can mean a lot of things to many people, so, but it wasn't. It was written before, so it's just, especially playing it around this area, alive, it means a lot to me, because I know it probably means a lot to a lot of people.
Because I know you also, and the reason why I asked that, because you've done the cover of George Harrison's While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and you worked on All Things Must Pass, which I still, to this day, think is the greatest post-Beatle album of all time.
Yeah.
You know, and
Now they're going to try and put him into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as just him, George Harrison.
That's a great way to go. Big influence on your life, wasn't he?
Absolutely. You know, I was walking down Wardour Street, ran into a friend who happened to have been a friend of George's in London, and he said, you know, he was Liverpudlian too. He said, "You want to come and meet George?" I said, "George who?" And he said, "Harrison." I said, you're kidding. He said, no, I was working on an album. And so we went into Trident Studios in Wardour Street, you know, a very famous studio there. And I walked in the control room, and there's George Harrison. You know, I'd never met a Beatle, you know. Right. So, and he goes, hello, Pete. you know. So sound just like his friend, didn't he?
Yeah.
they were brothers. No. So he said, do you want to play guitar, Pete, on this track? I'm doing this track with Doris Troy. And so she was the lady that wrote that song, great song, the Holly did. Yeah. And Stay.
What?
Stay. I think she wrote Stay as well. And so I went down to the studio. The studio's below the control room, and he hands me his sunburst, you know, 59 Les Paul, you know. And I almost, you know...
Worthless.
Yeah, terrible, terrible. I didn't know at the time, thank God. So I gingerly started playing... He said, here's the chords. And so I started playing the chords, and then halfway through the song, he stopped and he said, no, Pete, you play lead, I play rhythm. So I said... All right, then. Righty-ho, then. I mean, sort of petrified at that point. You know, it was that and sitting with George in Abbey Road when Phil Spector wanted more acoustics. There weren't enough acoustics on most of the acoustic tracks on the record, so we just sat in front of Phil Spector. He was behind the glass. I'm sitting on, you know, two stools like this. And George is here on my right, and I'm here, and we're overdubbing more acoustics on all these tracks. And so then they change reels to go to another song, and George starts playing rockabilly stuff. So we ended up jamming in between songs, and it doesn't get much better than that.
I can imagine it wouldn't.
That when people say, well, the best thing in your life must be when Frampton comes alive, I said, yeah, but... I have to say, the other thing that eclipsed that for me, it already happened, you know, sitting next to a Beatle, you know, playing on his record.
That's got to be like the most outrageous thing
but,
in the world.
But George, you know, I was a huge fan of his guitar playing, too.
He was a great guitarist. He was very underrated. People didn't realize what a great guitarist he actually was.
Very underrated.
And you play, I mean, guitar there, my friend, too.
Well, thank you.
when Frampton Comes Alive came out, and then, you know, after it was all over, you started hinting that people were taking you in different directions.
Yeah.
That had to have been really hard. Were you trying to please too many people? Because I thought the records that were coming out were great, you know. But, you know, when you have that much success, you can't possibly keep following it up record after record after record.
No, I think that Cameron Crowe sort of, if I can quote him, he said, it was like I was strapped to the nose cone of a rocket, and mm-hmm. I went through the ceiling up there, and there was nobody else around except me. So the only person that really knew from his gut instincts what possibly I should do at that point was me. But I thought that everybody else had, the management, record company, and agency, had handled a lot of big stars. You know, and so I looked to them, but it was really, we'd just rewritten sort of part of music history mm-hmm. there, because it had sold more than all of a sudden. No one had been there,
right.
You know, at that moment. Obviously, it's been surpassed, you know. Mm-hmm. But, and that I, you're right, I did, it was very hard to say no to right. a lot of the things, because I thought that's maybe what one should do.
Right, exactly.
You know, but the thing that we did with Frampton Comes Alive that it didn't need was we hyped it. After it became a huge hit, then we went out as if we didn't have a hit.
Yeah, right, right.
And we did every front page, every magazine, every TV
yep, sure,
show,
sure.
Mike Douglas, you know, and we didn't do Saturday Night Live, you know, stuff like that. I just don't understand what... Because I was too busy, we were too busy on the road, like, doing 3 and 4 gigs a day.
Was you really that bad? Were you really?
Yeah.
Really?
One day we did an afternoon gig on the East Coast and an evening gig on the West Coast.
Man,
you know?
Oh, man.
And sitting on the equipment in a very noisy plane. so, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, I have the wisdom from that now.
Right, sure.
So that's why we're still traveling on that same plane.
Does it make it more fun now? I mean, is it fun for you when you look back and you say, you know, all that stuff, I went through all that stuff, I know what was right, what was wrong? Because you're still an artist that when you get up in front of an audience, that's, you shine. You know, I mean, you are, you know, people that saw you Saturday or at Town Hall or are going to see you tomorrow at Count Basie. You are just one of those artists that gets up in front of an audience and it just comes on immediately. And you connect with that audience. Am I?
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
You're all agreeing. I mean, you are one of the best performers. I mean.
Well, and in a way, if you think about it, when people say, well, do you know why Comes Alive was so big? That's got to have something to do with it that I come across, I guess. It's hard for me to talk about how I come across, but from what you've just said, see, all I can say is I love playing live. Mm-hmm.
And it comes across unbelievable.
If everything's right and I've got my band with me and Bob's on the other side of the stage, then I'm fine. And we're going to have a great night. No matter whether it's a bad sound, we get through it. You know, if there's bad gigs and as well as great gigs, you know, and everything in between. And somehow we always have fun, you know, so it's...
And even back then it came through because really when you stop and think about it, how many live albums really have that kind of success? And yeah, you were in Humble Pie, and then you had mostly in San Francisco. You were a huge hit, and I remember playing Frampton's Camel on the radio, and I remember playing those kind of records. And then Frampton Comes Alive, and the whole nation knew you because of your performing.
It didn't really come from record sales. The following that we built influenced the record buyers.
Right, exactly.
And made it so that you had to play it on the radio in the end. You know what I mean? So it was a reverse kind of thing. Most people have a studio record that's a big hit. And then they later on in their career put out a live record and a best of.
Right.
Right? And not many people buy the live one. They go for the best of because they've already got the version they like of the song in the studio. With me, it was reversed.
Right.
You know, they preferred the live version.
The live version.
Yeah.
But that's just a credit to the way you perform. And still to this day, you still get that same thrill, huh? When you step
absolutely.
On stage?
Absolutely.
It's like, because I know a lot of, you know, you talk to a lot of performers and they're really, I got to go out and do it again. You know, and I never realized that musicians have that same, like everybody, people listening to radio, when you get up and you're going to work every day, You complain about your job. It's the same thing for a lot of musicians.
Yeah.
It's like I could tell you names of people. I won't do that. Who have got, you know?
Come on.
I won't say it because I promised somebody I would never say it.
But you know, Elton John was doing an interview a few years ago, and I there's something that he said. He said the show, because he's another one, his performances are always spectacular. Every show, he always puts on a great show. Every show. And he said, and they asked him, "How, you know, do you have good shows and bad shows?" He said, "It's so weird," he said, "because you can be well-rested and have eaten well, worked out, put the right wig on, whatever, and you go out there and it's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. And then you can have a 101 fever, be like, before you go out there and feel, I don't think I can do the show. And then you go out there and it's spectacular.
Yeah, right.
And it's a combination of the audience, the night, and whatever it is. But it doesn't matter how you feel before. It can just sort of happen right there and then if it's going
to
happen.
And a lot of young performers don't seem to understand that. It's a performance. You have to go out there, and I don't care if you're feeling bad or what. It's like those people are paying money to see you perform, and that's guys understand that. You guys know that.
Well, it comes from
experience and being out there. And, you know, I mean, somebody plopped that money down for that ticket. They want to see a show. Yeah. You know, they don't want
to... I'm not going to say I haven't... done a bad show, you know, it happens, but, you know, I'd say it's 99.9% they usually, you know, as best as we can do in the situation, you know.
Most definitely. So Absolutely Live, we'll get you to do another song. Brought to you by Tonic, by the way, in Pacong, New Jersey.
I'll be in tune because I just took the old capo off.
You want? Yeah, what we could do is I could take a break and we could come back and.
No, I think we got it.
You got it?
All right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to attempt the keyboard solo that Bob usually plays on guitar. Does that mean I'm Peter Frampton on guitar, Peter Frampton?
It's not much too long.
It's much too long. You have the mayo is much better, isn't it? And you know what? He doesn't eat mayo.
Really? No.
He hates it. I wonder if there's anything to that.
That was my next question. Does Bob Mayo actually eat mayo?
And my favorite color is... anyway.
I didn't invent the product.
Don't you wish you did?
No, I love it.
Well, you should do your own brand. Look what happened to Paul Newman.
Mayo's mayo?
Mayo's mayo.
Mayo's mayo.
I love it.
Redundancy.
Yes.
You know, this is an idea, guys. I'm writing this down.
No, Bob's mayo. That's it.
I don't like where this is going.
No. So why don't we play some music, Bob? Are you ready?
Fine and dandy.
Suddenly the day turns.
fantastic. Peter Frampton, Bob Mayo. Bob Mayo. At WDHA Absolutely Live. Thank you guys for dropping by. This has been an absolute thrill.
You're very welcome.
It has been a lot of fun. Did you guys have a great time?
All right.
Donna and Duke are Absolutely Live winners and their guests. And, of course, you got the show tomorrow night at the Cal Pace Theater in Red Bank.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that one.
And the new CD out called Now.
Now.
And make sure you go out and pick it up. Like, this has been a big thrill. It's been a lot of fun. It's been an absolute gas. So thank you guys for dropping by, all right?
All right, let's do it again sometime.
Yeah, anytime, man.
All right.
An open invitation. Well, at WDHA, we got more rock coming up on the other side. We'll do this right now at DHA.